Yeah, let's rock and roll.
I make no guarantees on that. Let's not make any.
Let's sit and vibe.
Welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrick Taylor, she, they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and making it your problem. This week's esteemed victim is...
My name's Hamster, they, them.
Hamster.
Hamster.
Welcome, Hamster. How is Hamster?
Pretty solid, actually.
Pretty
solid. Thanks for asking, Garrick.
Happy to do so.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for doing it. When I was like, hey, who wants to talk about wrestling?
And I was just like, uh-oh.
Well, sure, why not, though?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh. Yeah, later to find out that we got that in common. Oh.
Yeah.
So how much history do you have with the sport of Kings? Or are you just revisiting or just visiting for the first time? Or
Zero.
Zero?
Yeah.
So do you just have so many questions?
No. Okay, so I shouldn't say zero. I should say like a 0.5.
A 0.5.
Yeah, so there was the sidewalk slam and we podcast that we were, that my partner and I were into from Loading, Ready, Run. And then nice. Before we knew kind of the background, my partner and I watched Wrestling Isn't Real.
Oh, yeah.
A number of times. So I have a contextual idea, and I am, you know, I also grew up in the 90s where it just permeated the culture.
That's so the like thing,
I knew about Triple X and Undertaker and like all of, because they
Triple
Stone
H.
Cold.
Stone Cold. So no, that's great. What's fun about this is I came in around that time because like it was everywhere.
Just huge.
I didn't realize that it was a thing that was still going on. I would get the tapes when I was super young, and I was like, oh, this awesome thing that happened one time. And then it's like, dudes, mm-hmm. I knew are on the TV. And I was like, oh, shit. You're telling me we could go to this? And my dad's like, well, not us. Some people can. You can see them on the TV.
Oh, my gosh. Looking at these 90s faces.
Oh, yeah. Just the people watching.
So many mullets. So many glorious mullets. Oh. And I'm just like... Oh.
So many flavors. The flavors, yes. They're different flavors.
So many flavors. I love the kids. I love the kids getting super excited, and I love the women who are just like super flirting with the camera, and like it's just a lot of fun.
It all reeks of my being like 8, 9, 10 years old and going, that's it. Well, they all look like my older brother. This is weird. Because like all white dudes in the 90s looked exactly the same. The same mustache, very similar glasses. It's fucking weird.
There wasn't a lot of like style and
Well, we'll get right into it, I guess. Like, let's talk about our homework. I gave you homework.
Yeah.
So, Nitro is where I was gonna go first.
So this is the WCW.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The new and upcoming live show, whereas Raw was still being recorded and not live. I don't know if that was apparent to you watching it.
Right.
I'm kind of curious because, like you said, you don't necessarily have a huge knowledge of it, but was like it apparent to you that it wasn't live on Raw?
Yes, because I make note of it in my own work, where it's like I really love the cut to commercial when I forget what.
Well, Owens right in the air.
Right,
yeah.
When
well,
he goes off the top rope and you don't, in like before he lands the cut, I was like, oh, that's just great storytelling. Like,
yeah.
Everybody goes nuts. You're just like, does he hit? And
but
then he comes back.
What they had to work with, it was clear, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the big difference is Nitro is live in the Windy City. Yeah. And that
in Rosemont, Illinois.
Rosemont. And they're like, Chicago. And then it's like, Rosemont. I'm like, that's not necessarily Chicago there.
I was like, I think at some point they switched to Chicagoland area police because I think somebody was just like, yo, this is Rosemont.
Like, you got to cut that out. We won't be saying Elmhurst is Chicago. You know, like, this is like, hey, you know, I know enough to know. Come on now.
I was like, well, you can reach it by the blue line. So, like.
Then again, I'm from Wisconsin, so I always say that, like, I'm from a suburb of Chicago, Wisconsin.
Suburb of Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. It all counts. But, yeah, so that was the thing. But it starts, though, in media res of Hogan just, like, eating shit in, like, a
montage. Oh, my God. I didn't know I needed that in my life until I saw it. And I was like, whoa, is it going to be an hour of watching this dude get his mustache shaved off? Because I'm into that.
Kind of. Like, in an hour of an episode, there was, like, 5-6 minutes of him losing that stash.
Yeah, just constantly cutting to his face as he shaved it off.
Oh my God. Oh,
and the ambush by the little old lady. I love the character of it all.
The like, character of it all. So you would be a big Kevin Sullivan fan. That little old lady was Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. He was actually the booker at the time. So he's the guy writing the shit.
Oh, so that's the amazing.
Guy, yeah. So he's the one who Hogan shows up and says, I'm great. I need a bunch of money and I need to be a champion. And you need to make it sell. Because I'm going to sell, because I'm Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And then Sullivan's like, I got to make this work. And, you know, and he just tries. And he had a big thing. He came up real big in Florida doing a Satanist character. Like, ooh. And it was, like, edgy in, like, the Florida territories where he was freaking people out because he was like, no, I'm, like, leaned into the satanic panic. So, like, by the time you get to 95, like, to say a lot of folks in WCW was a legitimate gripe at the time, was kind of washed up. You know, he gets Taskmaster and he's like still trying to kind of be kid orientated. And he's like got his Dungeon of Doom with Kamala and the Giant and all this.
Oh, right. So has he created the Giant?
That's all right. We'll kind of talk about it because they talk about it in the things, but that's his stable. He's like, he tried to make the stable of heels, the stable of bad guys, because Hulk always had to be the good guy, right?
Right. I know enough about like the culture to know that Hulk Hogan's and like personal and like,
yeah.
That has always been kind of a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, no, there's another shout out to a different wrestling podcast. I love Public Enemies podcast. They're PE3. Those guys are amazing. They always joke about how Randy Orton's a civil rights icon because of the gif of him RKOing Hogan onto the back of a car. And I'm just like, yeah, I get that racist old fuck. Just civil rights icon, Randy Orton. The Viper. Yeah, those guys are awesome. So no, this is awesome, Hamster. You've taken notes, lots of stuff. So I'm just going to kind of try to run us through this.
Oh yeah, let's go.
Number one wrestling program in America. I wrote down Google that. I don't know right now. This is early on. We'll see if they, I don't think they were possibly at that time. I don't think that happened until, spoilers. Heenan in a question mark Bears jersey, though, was Bobby the Brain Heenan, the commentator, and the question mark Bears jersey was like everything for me. I don't know if you're familiar with Bobby Heenan, but this is Bobby Heenan stan cast. So he did investigative journalism, found out some that the big shit's going down, but you're in Chicago Fire, and then here's Sting. Sting offers peace between Lex Luger and Macho Man.
Right.
So you're kind of getting... Hamster's getting all of this upfront previous story. And my mind, though, is like, I don't know, I'm imagining like nice punch and pie, maybe some spreadable cheeses in the ring. We'll sit down, do a diplomacy.
I was like, what does he have in store? How can he bridge the gap? And, like, I think most of these, it's just, like, have you thought about beating the shit out of each other?
Well, you know, they might get there, but, like...
Oh, that's true. They have to, yeah.
They maybe they have thought about that, but the fact that Sting comes in, like, really wanting to lean into, like, we'll sit down, we'll get them pinkies out, we're going to discuss a problem, like, dignified, civilized dudes. You know, but then, hold on, John Tenta, the shark. Boom. So, like, all, yeah, so then,
right, I love all the shark costume.
The shark costume. John Tenta Hamster is a proud, proud athlete. I don't know. And they made him the shark. Hold on. Build as being from hailing from tsunami. I don't know if you caught that. They just billed him as being from, hailing from tsunami. And I'm like, you mean to tell me he's just coming out of a wave? What do you mean a tsunami? Like,
that's not a location.
That's not a location. And that's not a shark. That is former sumo wrestler and football player John Tenta. Come on now. Ah.
Wow.
There's a dark side of the ring recently in this latest season that did a whole thing about him, and he had a hell of a life and a hell of a story, and he's a cool dude, but this is like the oh shit part of the story where they're like, all right, what do we do with this guy? I guess you're a shark now because Kevin Sullivan's trying to do this spooky Dungeon of Doom thing, you know, so we're gonna get this man shark.
The shark, yeah.
The shark from Tsunami. Poor John Tenta. With the fake knockoff Jaws music, which was also kind of fucking amazing.
Isn't this just Jaws theme in a lower key?
Yeah, slightly off, you know.
Oh, that's rough.
It's rough. Can't go up on the and, you know, it's like quite off in the counting, and it's like, all right, sure. But yeah, then at some point, Heenan talks about maybe mentions, you know, sitting down at a nice table to talk it out, and I feel vindicated. But in that moment, I realized, though, that it's basically Sting is a surfer dude, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's a surfer versus a shark hamster, and I want Kevin Sullivan to fucking explain himself. like a minute into this match, I'm like, wait a minute, I see what's going on.
Oh no.
Here. Are you fucking serious with me right now, Kevin Sullivan, Taskmaster?
This is just a Jaws. It is Jaws reimagining. This is what would happen if they kept the beaches closed.
Which makes me think that it's like, all right, I have to write a show this week.
Yeah.
What's on TV? What's on TV? Jaws 2's on right now, guy.
Fucking A. Like, who do you think you would win in a fight? Like, he's got a surfboard, though. And he knows karate.
Yeah, right. Or John fucking Tenta. So, apparently, though, it's Stinger with a huge crossbody. Like, that he could win, like, half... Like, more than halfway across the ring, I feel like, with that top rope, like, just went all the way and hit him for a 1-2-3, and I was just like, that's...
Yeah, that was fast. Yeah, he went down hard.
He went down hard, and, like, I love that we're still... I bring it up so many times, but, like, in 95, to win with a crossbody is, like, that you don't do that nowadays. Now it's like, yeah, you got to do a triple gainer first. And you got to do it three times, and they're going to kick out of it at least twice. And like, that's as close as I get to going. But it was just really cool to like see that. I was like, fuck yeah, there you go. And that made me very happy. And I think safe to say that this match fucks is what my note said. So.
Final the judgment.
Final judgment. Does it fuck or not?
Yay or nay?
Yay or nay? Sting and the shark. Yay. They're fucking. While McNugget tries to make small talk, Steve Mongo McNugget. That's a Heenanism I won't let go of because I fucking hate that guy. And then, yeah, him and Bischoff are going off about first cage match on live TV or live national television.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm a hack, so I didn't actually look it up. I meant to. But I'm not even sure if it's the first one on Turner Broadcasting Station. Because, like, I'm pretty sure their very same organization had done one before. But who knows? I'm probably wrong, but I it continues to file away, and like, I'm seeing enough of a pattern hamster on episode 6 of like things that Eric Bischoff just fucking says.
Not fact checked. Like,
sure, why not?
Yeah, like, who's, and I mean, like, really, at that point, who could, like, who's gonna take the time to be just be like, excuse me,
fucking wrestling nerds, fucking smart marks who read the dirt sheets and are on the internet forums.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there
but
were
that's
always
like hyper
focused.
That's like 10 guys, you know. That's yeah. Like, and I'm just 8 going, is he really a shark? You know, like, no, it's, that's, so I'm, that's not true. I didn't watch WCW at this point. I know John Tenta is Earthquake. Thank you very much. Yeah. One half of the natural disasters. God, put respect on that name. But anyways, yeah. So that, I don't know, that I love that Kevin, yeah, because he could just say whatever. There's barely internet. WCW.com was a thing, barely. And there's like a handful of people. So it's like that thing earlier with the Google it. It's like, he could just say shit. Who's fucking paying
attention? Yeah, who's going to say, who's going to be like, excuse me.
Which is great because like now, like, he's got a podcast. Let's say, ask him about it. I'm like, I don't fucking remember. I go, oh, yeah. It was 20 years ago. What are you talking about? And they're like, sure. You mean you were just saying shit? Yeah. And then we get Kevin Sullivan dressed as the old lady again. And I think I think about the egg crime directive. and then the mustache, though, the shaving of the mustache. I think it's actually because he was filming Three Ninjas 3, High Noon at Mega Mountain. Are you familiar with the Three Ninjas franchise of films?
That would be a big negative.
Oh my goodness, hamster, you're probably better off for it. But there were three brothers. They're ninjas. They're all very kind of whitish, but their grandpa was not. And he taught them the martial arts.
Right, and, yeah.
But by the time you get to Three Ninjas 3, it is straight to the videotape.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Starring Hulk Hogan and television's Jim Varney. In what way?
Say no more, fam.
Yeah, right. It's so bad. Good. It's. I want to say it's camp just for there's so many reasons, and oh, I forget the lady's name. Who is the lady from WKPR in Cincinnati? I don't know how old you are. I'm probably being so old right now. But yeah, so it's camp-ish. It's also just, it's bad. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So I think he had to get it shaved anyways. And Kevin Sullivan's like, we'll make it a thing, you know? So like they hold him down.
Right.
We're taking everything from you. Yeah. So that movie, check it out. They talk about the sumo monster truck match coming up for our Patreon subscribers. I'm going to force y'all to watch that. And so, then, yeah, do you have a question? Please. Make me stop talking.
I need to know, do the monster trucks fight? Because.
Describe fight.
Like. It's true. Good question. They don't like have arms, but just like, do they smash into each other and like try and like crush each other, like a demolition derby type thing?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much we. I mean, I'm not sitting there going, how much will I give away for free? You can look this shit the fuck up. Anything that I've said, the Lapsed Fan podcast has probably already said. Shout out, co-chairs. Like I said, I'm a hack and a fraud. I'm just very gay, neurodivergent, and suck this shit up. But basically they weld them together at the front, and it's like a tug of war kind of thing. So you're trying to push them. It's sumo rules. So you're trying to get them out of the circle. So but they have them on top of a fucking building, hamster.
That's so cool. Wouldn't it be just a toll? Oh, see, I would have watched that and like hope one of them actually fell off the building, because that'd be
No spoilers. So, anyways.
What if some dude just fucking died? Okay, yeah. Continue on live TV. Like, hey, just.
Listeners, if you'd like to find out, you can.
yeah, I mean, subscribe to Patreon to find out.
Subscribe to Patreon or look at the fuck up. It happened 25, 30 years ago.
Please, I'd like to call. Because honestly, the Halloween Havoc promo, everything that they're leading into with the Halloween Havoc, like, legitimately slaps. I'm just like, oh, man, I still have the login. I could just watch that, right? Like,
oh, absolutely. Or fucking A, we will. All right, so we will set that. We will set that up.
I'll Halloween Havoc. I need to complete this journey now. Because
you got the buildup. I think this might be the go home before the actual one. But the monster trucks, yes, they try to push it out and the falling off and ha ha ha. So, again, spoilers, hamster. Spoilers.
No, I'm not going to look. I want to just go in there fresh.
It's so fucked up. So that's a good segue.
No spoilers, 25-year episode.
It's so fucked up, hamster. Speaking of fucked up, Sabu!
Yo!
How do you feel about Sabu? Tell me.
So Sabu, I was like, oh, fuck, this is racially insensitive.
You have just fucking no idea, but also kind of not.
Yeah, because I looked him up because, first of all, this is my shout out match. Like, Sabu is a great, like, a great wrestler, sells it super well. I think he does a lot of body storytelling.
Oh, God,
which
yeah.
But he was trained by the Sheik.
His uncle, yeah. The original Sheik, not the Iron One. And they actually do have, like that ancestry to a certain extent, but they play the fuck up. They're from Detroit, you know? Oh, so, but they play it up, you know?
Yeah.
But the Sheik is legendary, you know, and Sabu wanted to carry that. And Sabu was doing stuff. You didn't see that shit on TV. Like that. And you also, you could see it on TV if you lived in the tri-state area and could pick up ECW. I don't know if you're familiar with ECW at all.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Hamster's face. I wish y'all could see Hamster's face. like, what's a
tiny little baby face? Don't understand.
What's an ECW? ECW was like, all this stuff was going on. You know, we're watching the Monday Night Wars, the two big dudes fighting each other. ECW was the scrappy punk rock kids in the smoky bingo halls, as they like to fucking try to put them down with, who were reinventing the fucking game. And like, and eventually WWE comes in and basically just eats their lunch, copies their entire shit. And that's what becomes the Attitude Era.
It gets watered down.
So, but ECW was just, it was the authentic. Right. Terry Funk came in there and said, we're going to do this shit. And Terry Funk, the GOAT, helped get this little scrappy people off, and they became a fucking family, and they cultivated the tribe of the extreme, and they really, honest to God, changed shit. And it wasn't always good, and it wasn't always ethical. Love Paul Heyman, WWE Hall of Famer as of like a week ago. But absolutely, that dates this podcast, you know. But ECW is a big thing. And speaking of, it's kind of funny because you love this match. How'd you feel about his opponent, JL?
Mr. JL. First of all, loved the mysterious like caped entity. But also, I was just like, this is just Magneto.
Well, JL, I was like, Mr. JL, who's that guy? I feel like I know this guy. Look it up. Speaking of ECW, is his colleague Jerry fucking Lynn is another ECW guy.
Wow, the subtleness.
Mr. JL is Jerry Lynn. Right?
Wow.
So
no one will ever find me.
I am putting it off. That's quiet. So like Jerry Lynn just showed up. So basically, we're getting ECW on Nitro, you know?
Yeah.
So what I love is that what does the crowd do here? Starts doing Hogan sucks chants.
Yeah.
He's not in the match. He's not on screen.
I was wondering what they were screaming. I was like, does it say Hogan? Aren't they saying Hogan sucks?
They are, because they're seeing the opposite of Hogan. They're seeing like this real shit. Like, yeah. These guys look like they're trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
Hogan's talking about vitamins and Dungeons of Doom, you know? So like,
yeah, no, this was a very visceral fight. I was just like, wow, that's, it's like he's got scars on his body.
Oh,
I love
my God.
One of the announcers yells out, that man is banned in 17 countries.
I mean, I guess that's the thing, is I have to sit here and go, how much of that is a work in a shoot? Because, like, he...
He's banned in some... He might have been actually banned.
He might be banned in, like, two. I don't know. Like, Sabu has done some crazy stuff. I love that you love Sabu Hamster.
Yeah, big fan.
That's awesome. He does his chair bit where he sets the chair up and launches himself into him. That was a big Sabu thing. Yeah. You know, they still call that the Sabu spot. Like, using the chair like that is the Sabu spot.
I love that he, like, takes him out of the ring and, like, also purposely sets himself. It's like the hardest hits, but it's also the hardest falls.
Yeah,
it's very like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. And that's ECW. Yeah. They took those risks because they just wanted to give the show. They wanted you to be like, someone might die, you know, like, straight up. That was the mentality. Someone might die. And
like,
we're getting the watered down version of this. I mean, they put Jerry Lynn in a lucha mask, you know, like, but it's in Sabu fashion. He keeps going after the match, but the end, oh my God, the end of this though, the end sequence, the drop kick in the turnbuckle. And then he gets up and he tries to go for the super hurricanrana where he's sitting on the turnbuckle, right? And he's gonna but he like fell. He didn't make it, right?
Yeah.
So
I
do you
him kind of?
Yeah. Do you know what he was going for?
Mm-mm.
He was basically trying to throw him head over heels with his legs. Is what he was going to? Yeah.
Off the turnbuckle onto
the rat. And that's one of his finishers. It's a common finisher. It's a hell of a finisher. So, like, at the time, especially now, it's like a in-between move. But what was awesome about this is fucking Jerry Lynn, like,
creep.
Catches him and he just drops him. He, like, blocks it and just drops him. And I was like, that was amazing. And then he picks him up into a super sloppy powerbomb, like, and he's just out. In Sabu fashion, though, like I said, he just keeps going for it. I feel like they pull away as he starts looking for a table. Because he used to just pull a table out.
Yeah, he's just constantly... Yeah, he just... There's no stopping him. I love it.
Yeah.
It's a great, like... I'm big into TTRPGs, so like a great fighter or barbarian.
Oh, yeah.
Rage, like, yeah.
Sabu's a barbarian. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Just like, take half damage.
Yeah. No, it helps.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't give a fuck.
he's got bloody build. You know, the more tore up he is, the more harder he's gonna go.
Please, I need to keep this going.
Patreon, I feel like we're calling the Patreon so hard right now, kids. But we have a watch along coming on. It might have happened already. I forget. It could be coming up. I could look at the spreadsheet, but I'm not going to. where I'm introducing our friend Nova the Noob, who is also a noob. To three ECW matches to give them like an idea of ECW. We're doing those recordings tomorrow. So those are going to be fun watch alongs that you can do as well on the Patreon. So we're talking all this stuff about ECW, so that's a tie-in. But yeah, we're going to watch the match where Sabu proves his bloodied barbarian build, because at one point, wrestling fans know where I'm going. But for y'all noobs, content warning, body horror.
Oh, no.
The ECW does barbed wire matches.
Yeah, I was thinking about those. Oh,
ah. Yeah, so at one point, he's got a match with the GOAT, Terry Funk, rest in peace recently. And he gets caught and just tears his arm open. And he, like, calls dude over and is just like, I need tape. Give me tape. And the guy's like, what? Just go get me some fucking tape. And you can watch him on the program tape his arm up and finish the match, Hamster. Because it was the 90s and it was a different time and they were on a bunch of drugs.
I was like, yeah. I'm just...
Oh my god.
That's the rage. Oh my god, next. Oh my gosh, I know what my next character build is going to be.
There you go. There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sabu. Sabu's still bringing joys to
like
people's
ripping
lives.
Ripping lines and...
Yeah, ripping lines and fucking with barbed wire. And if a table isn't broken by the end of the encounter, yeah. I've fucked up.
Carry around a chair just to break
to
it over someone's head. Yeah. Where did those steel steps come from?
Bonk. There you go. Awesome. So yeah, I'm so happy you dug Sabu. And then we get the brief interlude of McNugget and his tinted aviators. I'm a Fallout nerd, and he's got the 76 Bears jersey, which I'm pretty sure was his jersey because he's a former Bear. And I was like, I want that in Vault Tech colors so bad, though.
Do they vaguely compare Sting to Henry Kissinger? Like,
oh my god, wait, just what? Like,
one of the great compromisers, or like,
oh my god, I didn't.
And they literally name drop Henry Kissinger. I was just like, seriously.
I didn't catch that, but that totally sounds like something Bobby the Brain Eno would say, which is why I love him.
I'm just kind of, I got a Google alerts in my brain for when that name's dropped.
Amazing. So yeah, Lex Luger continues his journey of not knowing, he doesn't know what to do with clothes. And like, honestly, I feel for him. And we are entering into that area where I was like, this is kind of trans and gay. So I was like, it can be really hard when you don't know how to dress for your gender you're performing, you know.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That jacket is not working, Lexi.
No.
No. Like, in all seriousness, what the fuck?
Yeah, he needs bangs or something. Like, that was just a lot.
The whole thing was a lot. And I think what it comes down to, in all seriousness, though, is that Lex Luger in clothing just always looks uncomfortable because he isn't naked. And he does
some
not know what to do.
Some people just can't.
If I'm a bodybuilder, like, I don't understand. Here, check out this jacket, but then how can you see my pecs?
Yeah,
wearing
just
a jacket. I don't get it.
It reminds me of like the toddler who always just needs to be naked or just doesn't wear clothes.
it's just weird clothes. Yeah, it's just weird. He just looks uncomfortable, like he doesn't know what to do with his hands. And like, all right. Yeah. Meanwhile, Macho Man clearly has several gay friends and a fucking plan. Oh yeah.
This is where he comes out in black, doesn't he?
No, Macho Man comes out in the like.
Oh no! I'm sorry, that's Macho, not Hulk. Yeah,
no.
Sorry. Oh, I love seeing Macho Man in like
Hulk
'95.
Wow.
Sorry. Yeah. Oh well. Yeah.
Brother.
Bitch. Oh yeah.
What do you mean? That's totally.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a totally different guy. Yeah, it was bigger than him.
It's super. So the problem is, Hogan.
Yeah,
it's the way that the words are laid out.
Anyways, it's fine, Terry. Calm down, Terry. So yeah, Terry Pelea. So yeah, like he comes out and I giggled. I had just on my notes. I'm giggling because Sting sounds like a concerned 70s sitcom dad.
Yeah, you know, he really does.
And
yeah.
It's like he, and you got the giant, and he's just going around here choke slamming all over the place.
Yeah, I think what he's really trying to do is like bringing it, like, this is how we all relate to one another.
Yeah,
because we can be choke slammed by the giant
at
any point,
any time.
Just, it would have been hilarious if the giant just like ran through and choke slammed somebody, then ran off.
I mean, I know it could have happened. This is the 90s.
I know,
but I also wrote down about everyone that's ever put on a pair of tights and wanted to be a champion. We've all been there. And again, I had that moment of like, I feel like I'm looking at three large eggs in a ring being interviewed by Mean Gene, all paranoid that everyone's going to figure it out and I'm dying. It's like the Tobias Fuke in Arrested Development. Like, do you listen to yourself sometimes when you talk? Do you guys hear what you're saying? Because like, girl, we can talk about it. Yeah, I'll take you shopping. It's okay. Torrid.
We'll figure it out together.
Torrid is super good for us bigger ladies. Let's go. I believe in you, Lex. We will make you look comfortable in clothing. But yeah, Sting, he doesn't look like the total package. He looks like David Byrne and Stop Making Sense.
Same as I ever was.
Same as I ever was. The total package.
You're not the total package.
You're David Byrne and Stop Making Sense. Again, while you just choke slam it all over. Oh, God, Sting. All right. So they start to build up someone arriving in the limo. We're coming to the end here.
Yeah.
I don't know how familiar you are. I don't know if I can't remember if we talked about this with Chris Benoit. But yeah, so they start to build up the arriving in the limo, someone that's been all over the world showing up from Japan. And I started, like, I was unfamiliar with this because I have never seen Nitro. That's why I'm doing the rewatch. And I didn't start watching Raw until like 97. So I'm like, oh shit, who's this? It's good because it's a debut of somebody. And sure enough, it's the debut on screen of the second biggest monster in the history of wrestling, Chris Benoit's hairdresser. And the third biggest monster in wrestling, Chris Benoit.
his hairdresser and him.
And him. Oh my God. The first, of course, being Vince McMahon, always and forever. But the second being those two tied. Because like, oh God, where the big boys play. So yeah, Chris Benoit showed up. Are you familiar with all of what went down with that?
Didn't he
snap a
kill
bit?
Himself and his wife
and the family? Yeah, a little bit. So okay,
because he had like there was like really bad like traumatic brain injury.
They,
right?
Yeah, they found and out like, after the fact that he had the like the brain of a 80-year-old dementia patient.
Yeah, and he just, because that's when I think around when that happened was when I was listening to, like, Sidewalk Slam, so.
That makes sense, yeah. And that was a big thing that went down. I remember just seeing it happen. I think it was like a Burger King.
Or afterwards.
And it just
because that popped. Was in 2007.
And it popped up on the news, and I was like, oh, shit. And then the next day it was like, oh, shit. So, like, it's wild that we're walking in. I'm walking into this, hanging out with everyone and watching all those old shows because Chris Benoit is going to
happen.
And he's there. And this is we're coming up on how he meets his wife. She's here. She's currently married to the Booker Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, okay.
Nancy Sullivan, Kevin Sullivan's wife, will then become Nancy Benoit. And yeah, so like we're entering into a very dark little thing and it's like, all right, got it. That's the every episode we have to acknowledge he's a monster and God, that hair really, it tried to warn us. the mullet just kind of like floofing out in the back. I'm like, oh my God.
But it was so obvious.
Real bad. And then the second week in the row of having to see Disco Fever without my consent.
I was like, what the fuck? It's great because everybody loves watching him get his ass beat.
And thus, he is serving his purpose as a jobber. Yeah. And that, you know, I love that AEW is starting to bring back the jobber, and I'm very, very happy with that. I gotta say that ACAB does include Big Bubba Man because he's the big boss man in WWE. But I would be okay if he goes carceral on Inferno. Then we get Road Warrior Hawk and just Road Warrior Hawk.
It was like over super quick, right?
Kinda. And it's,
I felt like it was
Disco showed up in the middle and got Hawk discounted or disqualified because he was fucking with him. Remember, he got counted out.
I didn't see the DQ. My God.
No, that's how it ended. And it was just really quick because he just showed up and started dancing.
Oh, okay, so that's why. Because I was just like, first it was like, oh, it was the match, and then it was done. And I was like, oh, crap. So.
Yeah, but I think
they should have both gone after his ass.
Right. I think that they probably kind of were trying to figure out what to do with him, though, because I don't know if you're familiar with the Legion of Doom tag team. But they were kind of bigger back in earlier in this time, Hawk and Animal. So he was part of a tag team that was like the tag team. You know, when the crowd goes really over the top hard, when they pop super hard to something, people in the business still refer to that as a Road Warrior pop. That's how popular they were, because like they set that bar in like the 70s, 80s. Like, that's how big they got. So this is during, but No Animal, right? This is during a period where they were broken up.
I was like, what?
They broke up, but not in kayfabe, in real life. They like, as friends, broke up because Hawk had hella drinking drug issues. I mean, a lot of them did, but Hawk was like bad off. So I was like, oh, where is he? I realized, oh, this is when they were broken up. Oh, yeah. They get back together.
Oh, yay!
Yeah! So that's good. I did kind of love the hat on his shoulder spike. And Hawk gives us a really awesome power slam, a Hawk's power slam, but then Disco shows up and then, it goes to shit. And that made me just sad because I was like, I could watch Hawk beat the shit out of Disco Inferno all night. Then they get the real reason for butts and seats. Hulk Hogan place erupts in booze.
Yeah.
How about that though? Because like, he's supposed to be the good guy. He like, that's the whole thing, is the shark and all them are supposed to be the obvious dastardly bad guys, and he's supposed to be the heroic good guy, and the whole crowd's just like, we fucking hate you.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that weird feel, that weird juxtaposition?
I don't. It feels very like Elon Muskish.
Oh my god! Where it's like, Hamster, that's amazing. Well said. Holy shit.
Yeah, where it's like, I'm the good guy. Everybody loves me. You need to make write it so like I'm the good guy, and everybody around you is like, no, you like, we can see, like, the emperor has no clothes, you're a piece of shit. And
okay,
like, yeah,
and here's okay, that's awesome, because like you said in the for posterity people, they said at the beginning of this show they had very little understanding of how this all works, and yet you have hit the nail on the fucking head of exactly what was going on at this period with Hulk Hogan.
It's good storytelling, you know? I mean, that's why, you know, I think people get intimidated by wrestling, but when you sit down and you watch it, and you're just like, oh.
No, here's the thing, though. That wasn't storytelling. That's the fun part. That's real. That's why I'm saying you hit the nail on the head of what was actually going down. The storytelling was they were desperately trying to make him the good guy. Mm-hmm. He came out in black because he was in mourning, and he was going to make a big comeback. He was trying to rally these people who were booing him. They literally thought that that's how it was going to work, and they didn't. They were like, "What the fuck do we do?" You know, and we're good, like, dear listeners, dear sickos, we're going to find out together. That's a lot of what Monday Night Wars ended up being, because they came up with an idea.
To figure out how to make Hulk Hogan
like fucking matter in any way, like to make him like be relevant in any way. And so like Hogan wearing all black, it's, they looks like a jackass. I can't figure out if Jimmy Hart is Hogan's imaginary friend or if Hogan is Jimmy Hart's imaginary friend.
Maybe it's a symbiotic psychosis.
I already decided it's some sort of weird Calvin and Hobbes thing, but I don't know which.
That's the fun.
Right? So speaking, I got this in my notes too, and we're already kind of talking about, hey, I'm getting better at this podcasting thing. They start talking shit on Vince about, like, they talk about up in New York choking on his own ego. They're talking about Vince McMahon. So this is, I like put this together watching this, Hamster, is that this whole Monday Night War is just about jilted ex-lovers fighting with each other through mounting ever escalating plays about how they don't miss each other at all. And don't put in the paper that I miss New York and Vince's sweet but firm hand. Please don't put it in the dirt sheets. Meltzer, don't write that I miss Vince's sweet but firm hand. And then, but firm. So, brother. And this is what it comes down to, is they're like, because they're trying to like, because as we'll see in Raw, he's over there shitting on Hogan and he's over there shitting on Vince. And yeah, the whole time they just want to be making money together and sticking steroids in each other's butts. And they just want it. That's all they want to do. They're best friends and harassing women. And, you know, all the things that they love to do together, like Predator.
Honestly, they complement each other super well.
They really always have. So it's it's an interesting time in wrestling. Like, just please don't put in the paper that I miss him. And then there's they make reference to the fact, I don't know if you called it, the giant, if you caught it. Did you catch the part about how they're trying to say he's Andre's kid? They're trying to say he's Andre the Giant's kid at this point.
Shut up. No. I missed that. Damn it.
Because Hulk Hogan made a lot of money slamming that big Andre the Giant guy one time. So all it becomes about is how... he's like, I need a big guy to slam, right?
Yeah.
That's his whole... All he knows how to do is me and Vince made money. That one time there was a rock and roll person there. Cyndi Lauper, and she was there, so the rock and roll people were there, dude. And then I slammed the big guy, brother, and then we made money and harassed women, and it was great. And we made a bunch of money, did drugs in the 80s, and he's just there. He just wants that back. So he literally brings in this guy who has the same disease as Andre.
Run it back.
Yeah, no, Paul. Yeah, exactly. Paul White has the same disease. He ended up getting the surgery that Andre didn't because Vince wanted him to keep growing. We can infer that. Again, those dirty co-chairs at the Laps Fan Podcast, they called that shit. They're like, no, I bet you just let him go. And that makes sense. I would not be fucking surprised. It's the number one monster of all time. But so that's what they're trying to do. And then there's the monster truck, Taskmaster, the giant Brutus Ted Cruz beefcake. And just thank fuck that the Hogan segment is over. And the man who they call him the man who had his mustache shaved off. And I'm just like, that feels like something a turf would say for a translator.
Yeah, it's very gender critical bullshit. Yeah, it's
like the man who had his mustache shaved up. And then we get Pepe ready for the football, but he's wearing Dirty Bears colors. Someone get that rack.
Yeah, cool. So cute.
Oh, I love him. I gotta say, like, dog. Right? I love him, though. He's so cute.
Yeah.
But I love that they stick to the football because it's like, yeah, we're like real sports. Like, no, you're not. No.
Well, also, it was like the 10-year anniversary of the 85. Oh, yeah. The 85 Bears Super Bowl win. So they were hyping that real hard.
Leaning into it. And Mongo was a Bear. So, like, yeah, they're real. And they're in Chicago. So they're going even harder. I don't know. I just, like, it reminded me in the moment of... someone was talking about how they need to fix officiating in the NFL. And my immediate thought was, this is why I watch professional wrestling, because I always know the officiating is fixed.
Yeah.
Because it's a fake sport. It's all fucking fixed. Ain't none of it real. So he can guarantee it. But with 10 minutes left in the broadcast, we get Ric Flair coming to a cage match against Arn Anderson. And it feels really silly to me that with 10 minutes left, we're getting... Like Bischoff says the quiet part out loud, you normally have to pay-per-view for a cage match of this caliber. Yeah. It's like Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, these are their former best friends. Like, it's a big match, and they've been running it back. And I think it's pretty funny that we're going to get to it. Raw advertises a cage match next week while this match is playing. You know, that's the mentality. You know, when we were 8, 9, that was the reality of what was going on, is you're getting a live, actual, happening right now cage match, and then a show saying, well, next week we'll have one that we taped like a week ago. And like, you can see how in the beginning of the wars, it's very, the fact that they're live is just so important to me. I feel like it's going to end up, the one thing Bischoff has is he pushed them to have to be alive. Because you can't, and we'll get, yeah, spoilers, sickos, they get dirty with it and take advantage of the fact that they're live and the other show's pre-taped and us, quote unquote, real sport. So it's wild, but like seeing it over time, like it's really cool. You see the patterns of like, it's happened a few times now where it's like, so they do similar things, even down to like wrestlers having similar sequences. It's like,
yeah,
how much is that of that is just workers having similar move sets, and how much of that is the fact that this was pre-taped? They maybe know the guys, talk to about it, know what's going to happen, and then just do it to kind of go poo-poo on them. I don't know. But they put Arn and Flair in a cage with 8 minutes, basically. And I will say, they understood the assignment.
Yeah, yeah. It was fucking brutal. I loved watching Ric Flair. Like, yeah. he's got such a style. And he's got such an attitude. And, like, it's even then...
only Flair, too. Like, only Flair does it like Flair.
Yeah, you know, true. And it's... I love, and they talk so much shit about him. They're like, he wants to be alone. He can't buy a partner. Like, all this stuff. One of the announcers gets really upset. He's like, he ignores me. He doesn't talk to me anymore. If you want to be alone, Rick,
well,
nature boy.
Do you want the there's backstory to that hamster.
Oh, I know there is. Fill me in.
Bobby Heenan was Ric Flair's guy. Ric Flair is a Bobby Heenan guy. Bobby Heenan, that commentator, is the greatest wrestling manager to ever do it. The job we're watching him do now is what he did before retiring. This is the end of his career.
He
did the commentary. So, like, the fact that he and Ric Flair weren't on the same page was a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
Because him and Ric Flair, he would die. That's his man. He would die for Ric Flair. They made so much money together. He's my guy. So it was a big deal and he was like trying really hard to push that. Well, he doesn't talk to me. That's why he was trying to make it a big deal.
Yeah.
Because the people who've been watching for a decade are like, how is Bobby Heenan not in with Ric Flair? That doesn't make sense. You know? And like the old, and that's why Bobby Heenan is so great, because a lot of people I feel like could have gotten to that point in their career where they're like, well, you know, a lot of that happened in the other company, you know, too.
Yeah.
And so like, do I have to make that effort? A lot of people probably wouldn't, but Bobby fucking Heenan did. Heenan is like, no, we have a history. Bobby Heenan brings up stuff that happened in the AWA in Minneapolis in the territory days before Hogan was Hogan. Like, Hulk Hogan became Hulk Hogan in Minneapolis before he got to WWE. And Bobby Heenan has hated him since then. Ever since then.
I knew he was son of a bitch back then. Now he's a son of a bitch now.
Yeah, right? And he does it. I wrote here, he didn't speak in truth. The fucking power of Hulkamania is like, fuck that guy.
The greatest character actors just have so much backstory and they just talk it.
Yeah, and Heenan lives it. And that's what's great about wrestling is like he came from an era where you lived it. We're seeing the tail, we're walking into the tail end of when you lived it. That's what was wild about this era is everybody, the wider world started, like you said it when we started recording, under like, it became more mainstream and more popular amongst everybody at this time. But the downside of that is like the real true end of kayfabe, where like up until then, like everybody kind of, you know, it, like people knew it wasn't real, but you bought into it. You bought into the lie and it was fun that you could trade. But what the thing is that it comes from the history of literal carnies. They're fucking grifters. But literally of like, you know, they call it professional wrestling because amateur wrestlers needed a way to make money when they're done in collegiate sports and not going to the Olympics. So it literally was professional wrestling. So you get these guys who were actual fighters, but they needed to make money. And it's like, well, you can't make money as a traveling fighter if you get injured. But if you work out with the guy, hey, if you go over and the people betting on it, we split. You know, and like,
we
draw people in, you insult my mom, I slap you, right, it makes people go, oh, God, we're going to see a fight. That's how this happened.
Yeah.
It started as real wrestling, but they're like, we can make more money deciding who goes over and we'll make it look
right. And I mean, like, they're in the, it kind of lends it, the sport itself lends itself to, like, kind of acting.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you know, I feel bad the first couple of episodes that we recorded this, I feel like I repeated myself a lot because I did it all in a weekend, so I try not to do that again. But I like saying that it's the true heir to vaudeville.
With the tumbling and like you see
everything.
Absolutely.
And even more so because
Buster Keaton did his own stunts.
Oh yeah. And even more so because it's still for the people. You know, Hamilton, how many people didn't see Hamilton until it got to Disney Plus, and they spent 3 years not seeing it, being told it's the greatest thing that ever happened in the history of media. And then, but they couldn't see it because you have to have hundreds and hundreds of dollars and know a guy and all that. And then when you finally see it on Disney Plus, like, are you fucking kidding me? This is the most asinine lip propaganda horseshit I have ever seen in my entire life. If I have any Hamilton fans listening, sorry. You know where to find
isolating
me.
That demographic.
You know where to find me. We can talk about it. It's horseshit. Yeah, you want to? And so, like, it's bullshit. We'll just put it this way: Aaron Burr stands. All right. Oh my God, that's funny. It's the same thing, though, to finish my long-winded point. That's for rich people.
Yeah.
Wrestling still costs, you're like, you can go to AEW for like $30, like a ticket when they come through town, which is expensive, but like not hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
Indie promotions, you can go see a show for $10, $15 in Minneapolis. And Minneapolis has an amazing indie promotion. First Wrestling is fantastic. I will always talk about that. I have some of my favorite wrestlers that I've seen who are on AEW shows now. I first came across them on YouTube, matches that they had in town at First Wrestling.
Oh, that's so cool.
Freshly squeezed Garrick Taylor, where I get my Dom de internet. Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy. The first match I saw of him was him and Danhausen at First Wrestling. And I was like, oh my God, whatever this guy's doing, this is it. He was fantastic. And that's local. And that's why, to me, it's the heir to vaudeville, is it's for the fucking people. It's where the poor people can still see theater. And it's absolutely theater and athletics. It's like Cirque du Soleil, but you cut your head with a razor blade. It's wild shit.
It's also like, it also very much taps into the, the Coliseum days and watching fights.
Absolutely.
It's such a cathartic, you scream, you get into it. It's such an emotional release.
It
feels great.
It's so fucking good for the soul to get in there.
Yeah.
And what I love about it too, and there's a lot of sides you can look at it a lot of different ways. But like, it's not like the NFL where like they're going out, you know, say what you will, you know, it's a sport and games. No, you're going out there trying to fucking hurt somebody. Yeah. Like that's what, you know, like that, you can't look at it any other way. And you like, I can't watch it anymore. I prefer my sports and my fights fake because I know that at the end of the day, they might be okay with actually hurting each other. And in the fact of like causing pain, but they're not trying to injure each other. And that's the difference. Like, you know, even if they can consensually say, hey, I'm going to like help myself jump up onto your shoulder so that you can throw me out of the ring through a table and it's going to hurt. But because I'm helping you do it, it's not going to injure me. Because I know how to take the fall. Yeah. And like, that's different. then
it's also very communal, right? Like,
absolutely,
we lift each other up, literally.
Yeah, like you can't, right?
Yeah,
we lift each other. It's oh, this is getting so deep, hamster. Awesome.
Yeah.
No, fantastic. That's absolutely it. We're here for queer weirdo perspective on wrestling. I'm telling you, this shit is gay and therapeutic, and men could go to therapy through wrestling. And a lot of these wrestlers should have gone to therapy. But absolutely, like you can't power slam someone if they don't want to be power slammed.
Yeah.
That's like one of the first things they tell you. And if you watch like MMA and like mixed martial arts, you can see that it doesn't look like, you know, some of it, they use similar aspects, but like you could tell it's different. One of the big things is, especially in earlier wrestling, the era we're watching right now, there'll be rest holds where they're like, they have a guy in a submission hold and the guy's not giving up, right? And they'll be in it for like 5 minutes while they're both catching their breath. Whereas if you watch MMA, the moment someone sinks in a submission hold, the guy's tapping out like, don't break my arm.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the difference. It's like, that's how you know they're not actually doing it, is because they're sitting there for 5 minutes. And it's like, well.
Just in case. Hold on. Wait, what's next? What's next?
Yeah, they're just thinking about it. Yeah, exactly. What are we doing next? So, no, that's awesome. And, That's Nitro. It took us a while to get
that's through. Nitro.
It tells us Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit in 1995, and I tell you, I'm excited for next week. That's what we have to look for.
Yeah.
And then there's Raw, is what I'm going to say. I'm excited to see what you say about Raw. I wasn't happy with this Raw. They remind us that they are presenting a sports entertainment with revolutionary force for over 50 years. and then they just go off and I don't know. How did you feel? Well, why don't you start? Because I got nothing but mostly bad things to say about this Raw.
Okay. So this is Camp Cornette, which is Owen Hart.
Camp Cornette.
Yokozuna and the British Bulldog, and it's on Columbus Day, so saw a strong start.
That makes up for the USA chants later. Yeah. When they're chanting USA for I feel like it was important enough to write down. They are chanting USA against a Canadian, a British man, and an American Samoan pretending to be Japanese. That's why they're chanting USA, is because the heel, the Camp Cornette bad guys, are all not American, is why they're chanting USA.
Okay.
Because the pro wrestling fan is a simple creature.
Tiny brained. Very.
Especially.
Watch the keys
and look at the flag. Look at the flag. Look at the flag. America. Jesus. Yeah. But yes,
Hulk Hogan.
Oh, no, not him. He's in the other one. And I don't miss him. Don't put in the paper that I missed him.
That's oh, right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Other show. Oh, my God. We don't talk about it.
Other show. Sorry.
Other show. My God, King. But yeah, no, they show up. I love that Yokozuna is just like making a random face that doesn't make any sense into the camera, because like at this
dude looks huge.
He's just later in his career. Like he's not as mobile as he was. I think he's less of giving up a shit. He was the world champ for like 2 years before this, but I feel like he's very much in the state of just not giving a shit. And I feel like he's not around for much longer. But it's also seeing him just try to have fun, and like you get shades of the bloodline, the Anoa'i family. I'm not sure how much you're familiar with modern wrestling.
Isn't that like
Roman Reigns?
The Rock's not from it.
No, he is. The Rock is the Rock married, technically not by blood, but by marriage. Roman Reigns and the bloodline, the modern thing, the bloodline they're talking about includes Yokozuna.
Oh wow,
that's Uncle Rodney.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Uncle Rodney. The Usos, they talk about coming in and saying, hey, Uncle Rodney's on TV, and he's like, Uncle Rodney's not Japanese.
Small side note before I forget, British Bulldog is fucking caked up, and I was like, is this man 1995 the only period of time where a British man was caked up. I was like, damn.
And
he got that booty.
He do. And he managed to cut the super culturally insensitive cornrows off at this point, so it was okay to like the booty.
Oh, no. Oh, good. Oh, my God. I'm glad he got rid of the cornrows. Oh, God. What a British dude.
Davy Boy Smith is, if we're list of monsters, I don't know. I mean, top 20, 25. I don't know. It's hard to say because there's so many of them. He's not a great dude, but caked up, yes. And then we get representing the dark side, Darth Calloway, the Undertaker, because Vince warns us the Undertaker may murder and bury someone in this 6-man tag match.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I wrote down, I was never into wrestling much, but I was aware of the Undertaker, which appealed to me because I thought about death a lot. Because this is 95, I'm assuming he gets bigger with the Attitude Era, because I remember him.
Well,
I don't know, though.
Man, that's what's wild. But Undertaker is a whole thing onto himself. He was already in the company for 5 years at the point of when you're seeing him. I think he already held the title at one point. Like, he was kind of a bigger deal. I can't remember. Well, no, he might have not gotten the title till later. But, he was a part of the Attitude Era, but not as much. He was more a part of the era beforehand. But he stuck. But his whole thing is that he stuck around. He was the Bowie. He kept changing. At one point, he stopped being a dead man and started being a biker for 4 years. And
American Badass,
the American
Big
Badass,
Evil.
Big Evil. Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. Okay, yeah. I remember Ministry of Darkness, kind of.
Ministry of Darkness era. Yes, that's my Undertaker. In the sense that was the one that I was watching live, is Ministry of Darkness Undertaker, which is wild. And I stopped watching after about a year or two of American Badass. I was like, I can't. And there was lots of reasons, but not having actual Undertaker didn't help. did not fucking help. But yeah, look, we get into this match and they cut to Shawn Michaels talking about being he's choking up, talking about being a hero to kids.
And they are beating that shit out. Yeah.
They're beating the shit out, but also just in that interview, it's one of those things where it's so great to watch this in hindsight because he is fucking zooted. We know this to be true because there's books about it. His book. He's talking, I choke up being a hero to kids, and you watch it, I'm like, dude, you are so fucking fucked up right now.
Yeah, there was a lot of talking.
Yeah, and he's just kind of going. It's like, yeah, Sean, all right. Cool. And then back to the match, over 300 pounds. I'm like, look, Vince, that's not impressive. So am I. coming back from commercial break to a match already happening. And I kind of really like that. You don't necessarily get that as much anymore. Sometimes a little. Again, AEW is kind of bringing that back. But for the opposite reason of what you saw before, where Owen Hart does the jump off and they cut away. And it's they were able to play with that. And they don't do that anymore because it's become more about live. And I like that it's one of those weird things where the fakeness of it, the plan they had to put into to make it seem more real, now because it's more live and real, it makes it seem more fake. If that makes sense. It's weird how that worked. Now it's the opposite to me watching it now. It's something I feel you don't get as much with. It feels more like a televised event, not a televised show, like a television show.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This
feels more like you're jumping back in on these guys are fighting, And whereas now it's it's very much more segmented and you still get some of that. And AEW does it better. But I love how it just falls apart into an all-out brawl within 30 seconds. Everyone just, this is 1995, it's happening.
Because I made a comment. I didn't recognize it the way that you recognized it, but I did make a comment of immediately to the good stuff. That's why I really loved the WWF, the Raw, because it was just immediately into the wrestling, and it was chaotic, and it was brutal, and like super messy.
Yeah.
And
this is the first time on our journey I feel like I've really seen something like that, though, on this watch along. They're starting to figure that out. It's so cool to watch in real time, because that absolutely becomes a staple. Like, that it's a thing that happens, and it giggles me, because there's folks nowadays that complain about how, you know, the rules don't even matter in tag matches, everyone just pours in. And it's like, in 95, this is literally what's happening. And like, literally some of the old dudes making that argument are in this match. Where it's funny
if we're in the crowd. I mean, you see it's so showy. You see the ref like looking everywhere outside of like the team member helping his team member to like tighten the grip, like this wild stuff.
Oh, when he's got Sean in the abdominal stretch, and he does the heel move of reaching back and getting like the extra torque from his Oh, I love that shit. No, this was a pretty solid match. The big Samoan drop from Yoko is like, hell yes, where he picks him up on his shoulder and just falls backwards.
I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, oh, just that man falling on me. I would just be like, oh.
Oh, that's one of the ones that gets passed along the family. Uncle Ronnie puts it. Speaking of that, he does a rock bottom. He does the Rock's finisher. In this match, he puts his arm over him and like picks him up and slams him like that, kind of a choke slam, but not choking him. That's like, it's called an Uranagi slam, but like, that's a rock bottom. And I was like, holy shit, they really like all the Anoa'i guys just share moves. That's awesome.
That's cool.
And Undertaker did like a floating DDT where like on Yoko, where they like floated and like shifted in the air. I don't know if you caught that, where he had his head under his shoulders and they just kind of like moved together. It was like a lot of people do a DDT, but that one's like fucking goddamn. Like, those two together were friends in real life too. Undertaker and Yoko were really good buddies in real life. And like they were in my, I think the best part of this match was when they were working together. Like, holy shit. So cool.
The commentator, and when it just goes to total chaos, I noted, because I'm this person. He goes, he wouldn't have discovered America if he knew this was going to happen. Like, and I was like, I don't think that dude knows. I think it was like Vince McMahon. I was like, I don't think that dude knows a lot about Columbus, actually.
No, probably not. No.
I think Columbus would be like, oh, okay. Wait. He was like, wait. No one gets beheaded? Wait.
No, all he knows is fucking shoot steroid, eat hot chip, and lie. Yeah, that's all Vince got.
That's all he got.
But yeah, I love the franchise, Dean Douglas. Dean Douglas, this
he's
guy
out there taking notes,
like, yeah.
He's keeping an eye on this. As the fucking ref is not clearly watching some flagrant bullshit go on.
I love
it. Little narc ass.
He just keeps making, this is like the third time it's happened. And he's just out there taking notes.
What do you do? But doesn't he... But the Dean goes after Shawn Michaels, doesn't he?
At the end, yeah.
They're building up.
He goes hard. Remember I told you about ECW? Dean Douglas is Shane Douglas. He was one of the first ECW champions before he was here. So he came from ECW to this. So it's like they have him as this like teacher character, but Dean Douglas can throw the fuck down.
What do you like? He's a professor. Why? Because his name is he's like, he's a dean.
Because he's a dean. Well, he was actually a teacher in real life, so that's why they got that.
Shut up.
So you find out that we're coming, especially into the era where everyone's just themselves. And so it was great, though. This match was really pretty good. Owen Hart sells the surprise roll up, like, oh, it's so good. And I just wrote down, put that in your back pocket, Owen. That's going to come in handy against Steve Austin at a Survivor Series coming up, where he ends up, spoilers, injuring the fuck out of a guy. And though they have to finish it by doing one of those surprise roll-ups. So I wrote that down. I was like, all right, put that in your back pocket, Owen. You're going to need that.
Owen Hart going after Shawn Michaels' spine makes me fucking cringe. I'm just like, please stop.
Oh, God. They're just like all the places that are actually going to get hurt. Yeah. And what a finish, though. Undertaker saves his guy. Yeah. This is what I love, is that we were talking about the ref trying to pretend to be oblivious.
Yeah.
Undertaker comes in to knock the guy off of the pin to save his guy. While the ref is admonishing him for doing so, Yoko very slowly saunters in and drops this huge leg drop. Like, the ref wouldn't feel the impact of Yoko fucking Zuna sitting down. And like, oh, I don't know what happened.
How does a 300-pound dude sneak up on you?
Just so fucking quietly, like 600-pound guy.
On canvas.
Drops it down and sneaks back off, and you turn around and Diesel is flat like a Looney Tunes.
He's just laying there.
Like, holy shit. And I don't know what happened. That's why I don't know. I guess cover him. That's so fucking wild. I don't know what happened. And then, also, what the fuck?
They mentioned 1995 AOL.
Yep. We're getting there. We're going to have the internet soon. It's going to help break this whole thing. I lost track of all the Mabel elbows, because then they get, like, Mabel comes down and everyone just, it's even more so.
King Mabel.
King Mabel beating an undead horse that is the Undertaker.
Yeah,
just elbow and elbow and elbow.
Yeah, him teaming up with the Bulldog.
That could be a while. Oh, yeah, we're going to get to that. So, yeah, now we've gotten enough video packages, the baby faces, like, stir awake. Like, they show a bunch of what happened before, and then the baby faces stir awake. And they talk about Mayor Glenn in the cage match on Raw versus the excellence of contractually obligated execution Bret Hart. That's ought to be cool. The guy who is the dentist is a mayor in Tennessee now.
His name, so just to be clear,
yes,
the character's name is Yankum.
Isaac Yankum, DDS, yes. You know,
it's like, surely,
you know, like knowing, like a dentist.
Knowing in my heart of hearts that it had to be true, questioning.
And his theme music was, in fact, just a dentist drill. Going, that's it. All right.
19, yeah, man. Those dentist suicide stats are not being helped here.
But they're going off about the cage match, and that's good. Yeah. Vince threatens Lawler, Jerry the King Lawler, with more jail time than he'll ever actually see for his crimes, which is unfortunate. Yeah. You see Vlad the Superfan, for those who know who he is. There's this kind of guy in glasses, kind of scrawny, muscular dude in a tank top who's like really into it in the crowd. He's known as Vlad the Superfan. He is literally at every fucking show and has been for like decades. Oh my gosh,
I did not spot. Okay.
If you end up continuing to watch wrestling because I have fully infected you in these 2 hours.
Because I now have the brain worm.
Because now you know how I have the brain worm. Keep an eye out for Vlad. Vlad's been around
forever.
Okay,
I will, yeah.
He's the Superfan. He shows up in wild places. He's everywhere. They finally made a documentary about him. Because he had a hard time over COVID, because over COVID there was no wrestling. There was wrestling, but there was no crowds. And he's like, what do you mean I can't go to Madison Square Garden and see the show? What the fuck? Like, this is a guy who is at every show his whole like life. And like, he had a hard time when it was like, you can't go to the show. Oh, and he's like, lonely. Lonely. He's like, I can't go see my people. Like, he's at every show, and like the people ask him, and like he's like, you know, he can't say it, but it's like he has a hookup. But like, he's been there forever. Yeah. He's been part of storylines, sort of. Like,
that's so cool.
Well, they came up. I think it was was it, I forget who it was, came up to him in the crowd at a very old show. It was like Roddy Piper. Someone was like, who do you want to beat Roddy Piper? And he's like, Hulk Hogan. And they went up to him because they know it's Vlad. They're like, Vlad's going to say Hulk. Yeah, so like we're going to get the response we want if we go to Vlad. He's going to say Hulk.
Yeah, I'm good for him.
Right. Jerry goes off about someone insulting his mother, and I was like, no, I'm...
Oh, yeah. And I'm like... So he was talking about why he got he got involved with Bret Hart.
Yeah, he insulted
my
mother.
In the SummerSlam match. I was just like, shut the... Like, and it's barely... Oh, my God. First of all, I love Jerry Lawler. Like, the fact that his body is just normal shape. Like, zero problem taking his shirt off or his jacket off.
I have a problem with it, but go on.
zero problem talking smack.
But I was like, no, I'm not scolding her. I am not or insulting her. I'm scolding her for whatever the hell you are, Jerry. So,
yeah.
But yeah, at this point, though, we're watching the SummerSlam match, right? And I put it together just now that I'm like, wait a minute. The second match of Raw, they're literally just showing us the SummerSlam match. This rompum stompum affair. Oh, you know, it's like they didn't have anything and they're just doing new commentary over it. They're talking over it again.
Filler, yeah. And they're leading it up to
their next
pay-per-view, which is...
In your house,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Shark and also, Jerry's going to be... put in a cage above a cage.
Shark tank for a shark. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't put a king in a cage.
Sure, but you can put a predator in a cage and you count
Waller. God, you should have just left him there.
Yeah, please. Yeah. So
go back in time.
No, I literally wrote down shark tank the king and leave him there. So,
yeah.
But
nothing of value was lost.
That being said, Bret Hart is getting a decent match out of the dentist.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to him, I have to say, because, like, fuck, Glenn gets better when he becomes Kane. But in the meantime, fuck, he's not that great. But Bret is just so good. It's wild. It just blows my mind. That's why I get to the point where I'm like, this Raw sucks. Because they're literally just giving us a SummerSlam, which, cool, they're giving us a SummerSlam match. But it's just them talking over it, and it's like, okay, and that's also where it's like, it becomes very clear that you're not watching a live show.
Yeah.
Because what's going on to the crowd while these two chuckle fucks are talking over...
Yeah, that's a really good point, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, as an adult, I'm putting this together. Oh, as a kid, I was like, all right, whatever, I'm watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't make sense, but... then we get an actual match. We get Tammy and Chris, the Body Donnas, Sonny and Skip, actually. Tammy and Chris is their real names. Speaking of Bloodline, that continues. Fatu, making a difference. The guy he's fighting is another Bloodline. That's Jimmy and Jay Uso's dad. That's Rikishi.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, I love Fatu. I thought I was like the breakdancing moves before laying Skip out is just so fucking good.
And it's awesome because Rikishi ended up, the big thing that he got over with later in the Attitude Era was dancing. And it's like, I'm like watching it. I'm like, no, he's always been doing this.
Yeah, like, what? It's a great...
It's fantastic. He's just always been dancing. He just found a new way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, actually.
Basically, the music and outfit got better in a couple years, and that's about it. Or was this the same shit?
A glow up.
Yeah.
Fresh color, coat of paint. Also, I was like, Skip definitely needs a cup. I was like, also, as the match goes on and his little slinglet comes off, and I was like, baby, what are you doing?
No, I saw it was like Skip's second strap comes down. Yeah, we must be about 2/3 through the match. It's like he's keeping time, you know? He's like,
yeah.
It's a countdown.
Sunny using her feminine wiles.
Oh,
dressed very much like Barbie, actually. Like,
oh, well, that was the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, and I wrote down.
It's very Euro.
I wrote down, oh, Sunny, size and gay, because I'm a simple bitch. And I know what I'm about. And like when I was a kid, it was all about Sonny. But
Sonny's great.
Sonny was awesome. I love Sonny. Everyone hates Iron Man. I was like, fuck yeah, Sonny.
She'd know what her job was.
Quick aside to any fellow Lapsed Van fans. And they recently, at the time of this recording, read an email of mine on their latest mailbag show, but I have to shout it out. Anyone who listens to him knows that there's a list of words that Vince McMahon says. Just, he has a list of words that he just says, and it doesn't, none of them make sense. But when he dropped one of them here while reading out lists of upcoming house shows, he just says, notwithstanding Utica, New York. And notwithstanding is one of those words that, like,
oh, that's not actually a word.
Well, it is, but it's like a phrase that he uses, and it doesn't necessarily make sense when he uses it. So I just felt like, if y'all are listening, probably not, if anyone who listens to both these shows knows what I'm talking about, he actually fucking did it, guys. Folks, they're not making it up. He actually, in the middle of talking about upcoming shows, used one of these phrases in a way that did not make sense. And I had to take note of it, because what the fuck? So, Rikishi popping locks on a comeback.
Back to the mat.
Back to the mat. Yeah, Vince is confused about what Sonny is saying because he doesn't listen to women. And he's saying Sonny is going to have a hissy, and that pisses me off. Something about Monsoon getting an Gorilla Monsoon getting an Oval Office, which I was actually like, that's fine, he gets it. Okay, here's something that happened though that's like, what the fuck? I'm not sure if this counts as there as a segment of There Were Signs, because it's not Vince McMahon specific. We occasionally do a thing, Vince will drop something where it's like, oh fuck, we should have known that this was gonna happen. This is just general wrestling racism, hamster. So Samoans can't be headbutt. You can't headbutt a Samoan and have it do damage, because that's a whole...
it's like a racial trait from AD&D.
No, it's literally like a racial trait from whatever edition of D&D the wokes got mad about, me being one of them, because it's wrong. You can't headbutt a Samoan. So it's common wrestling racism.
Oh, so that explains
it.
Yeah,
they have superior heads on account of race science. And I wish I were kidding, but it's literally a thing that they do. Every Samoan has a thing where they have super hard headbutts. And if you try to headbutt a Samoan, the other guy sells it. Everyone knows it. It's like an on-going thing. So Skip tries to do the flying headbutt on Fatu. And he fucking no sells it, and Chris Candido acts like he hurt himself, and I know it comes from an awful place, but fucking hamster, I popped so hard. I was like, are you fucking kidding me that every Samoan wrestler gets to have that superpower? Like, they just, if you're a Samoan wrestler, you get to not get headbutt, and that's fucking awesome. Like you said, it's like a perk. It's like a Fallout perk or a race attribute in D&D.
Tiefling is like resistant to fire.
There
you
go. Yeah. Samoans are resistant to headbutt. It's terrible racism and race science, but it's pretty fucking awesome, and it worked as Fatu's advantage here. Tell you what, like,
won
in the match, and I laughed so fucking hard because I've never. I've seen the joke done over and over of, you know, the no sell. I've never seen it on a flying headbutt, and it was
just stands there.
Oh my god, I lost my mind.
Yeah.
Then they go back to they throw it back to Doc Hendricks pretending he can't hear him, pacing back and forth, thinking about the things he's seen, the things he's done, the choices he's made. Then they're going back to the rewatch shit. They do a SummerSlam of something that happened 20 minutes ago, and I hate it. Again, like, all my notes are shit. I did not enjoy this Raw. Bruce Pritchard slapped Hendricks around a little, splashed some water on his face and his hair and his chest, snapped him out of it, so he's able to tell us that the baby faces are hurt.
The baby faces.
The good guys are hurt. Sean's hurt. But he busts into Corny's camp to cut a promo. And Bulldog, like, shadow boxes in a baseball cap while Jim
Give
Cornette.
It to him.
And he's just doing it and doing his thing. And Corny says it's the toughest fight he's ever been in his life. And I agree, because it was fake. Corny doesn't get in fights. Corny gets his ass kicked. It's a different thing entirely.
But no, put... a fight requires two participants.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, yeah, buddy, you just get your... Sure, bud. Sure. At least he put his glasses back on. He feels I feel like he's naked when he doesn't have his glasses on. But Bulldog's like nodding his head rhythmically, waiting to talk. And my brain was just going, bruv, bruv. Bro.
You know, that's what the little bulldog on a trike is circling.
Bro. Yeah, I blame Will Ospreay for saying bruv all the fucking time. he's talking about the 50 below hellhole, and I was like, that's my nickname in my 20s, Davey. That's fine. And then I realized that poor Jim Ross is the guy who's holding the microphone for all this horse shit. And he's a fucking legend in the game. And he just looks visibly disgusted. And like, I don't know if it's in the script for him to be visibly disgusted or it's just him going, God, fuck. All right. Yeah, let's go. Sure. Woo. Bro.
I don't feel like Bulldog had a really great just had the riz for the promo. I think maybe it was really tainted by the hat given to him by Princess Di, which was just very weird thing to say. I was like,
that's so fucking good. That's such a Cornette line too. That's such a Jim Cornette line.
It was a Cornette line.
Yeah, that's such a Jim Cornette line. Give it to him by Princess Di. You know, like, big deal. And then here comes King Mabel. See, royalty.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And then they give us more replays from half an hour ago. Shark cage for a shark. Which I think is funny because Jerry Lawler is a predator. As two on the nose. Okay. And that's the end of... We got through Raw. That was Raw. Yay, Hector. Yay.
Clap emoji.
Clap emoji. What the fuck? So... I don't know. Do you have other notes on Raw? Other things that you... Notes, questions, concerns?
No, but I thought I did... Going back to the steel cage match, I did think that Ric Flair was done dirty.
Back in Nitro? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. That's why I cut you off before, because if we're done with Raw, that brings us to Match of the Week. What was your Match of the Week? Was it Arn and Ric?
No, actually, I think it was Sabu and Mr. JL.
Mr. JL, Mr. Jerry Lynn.
J to the L. It was, I really loved the chaotic, barbarity of Raw.
Yeah.
The opening fight, because just, everybody was going fucking nuts, and I saw a lot of people that I...
And they had set it up the week beforehand. It was, a thing where, these guys butt heads, and they went right to it. So I agree.
Yeah.
I will agree that was energy. And that was a good opener. I'll give Raw the opener. It was a good opener. You've turned my mind around.
I'm happy I could convert.
Yeah.
Not intended, but happy to do so.
But what are you calling your favorite then? Is it Sabu or that one?
So I think my favorite was Sabu.
Sabu and Mr. JL. Yeah, that show was pretty great.
I felt it was very tight and brutal. With Raw, I was like, oh, I can see people telegraphing.
Can see the little bit of the choreography of it.
Right.
It's a little, whereas those two were fucking fighting each
exactly.
other.
Exactly. It was hit after hit. They just moved super well together.
Yeah.
And even though JL looked like a clown.
Yeah, but he doesn't wrestle like a clown.
No, certainly didn't.
No.
And it held my attention well. So yeah. I think that's my...
There you go.
That's my...
And the clowns wrestle in the other company, Doink. Doink the Clown was in WWE. And then eventually the Indies, actual wrestling evil clown. No, that shit existed. Wild guy in real life too. he kept that gimmick going in the Indies as later in life, and also kept doing all the drugs. And if you look up later Doink the Clown matches in Indies on YouTube, he just straight up looks like fucking Pennywise.
Oh my god!
Evil fucking clown shit. It's fucking scary. Him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I showed someone a match. There's a match on YouTube of him and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, both old dudes, where and from this era, who like worked in the company a little bit, you know, a couple years before this era that we're watching now, like fighting, like they, like it's start, like they're not supposed, it's a work or a shoot. Is it real or not? And at one point, like, Matt Bourne, Doink the Clown, like hits, like knees him real hard in the face, real hard. And at the, Jim Duggan's like, are we working or are we going? Like, you want to work with me right now or are we going?
Yeah.
And it's like on YouTube, you see these two old dudes seeing some shit. They both look like Vietnam vets who like came back and like saw shit. And yeah, and they're in the ring going, we working or we going? And I'm like, oh my God, guys. And like, yeah, Doink the Clown's nuts.
It vaguely reminds me, the fight in They Live.
Yeah, yeah, no.
John Carpenter's They Live, like, it was an 8-minute ass kicking.
Yo,
like,
those are my favorite kinds of matches. And I mean, that's Roddy Piper. That's a professional wrestler.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Oh.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. No, that's glorious. And that's why no one else put Roddy Piper and fucking Keith David could have done that movie. It wouldn't have been as good.
100%.
Like, they absolutely got it. And you know that Roddy was just like, I'm going to show you how to fuck. Like, we're going to kick each other's ass. Like, because how do you make that look real? You fucking hit.
Well, I looked it up. The only hits that they pulled were to the face and groin.
Yeah,
everything else landed.
Yep, there you go. And that's what's just awesome amazing. Is a lot of what you find out when you learn more about how professional wrestling works is that, like, Rick, the perfect example, you're talking about Rick and Arn, the chest chops that he's famous for, where he slaps the chest super hard. And woo, and it's like he's famous for those, and chest chops are a big thing. And it's like, well, how do you fake that? And it's like, you don't. But if you know someone who's into, let's say, impact play and you know, in a kink dynamic, it's the same mentality. You know where it's safe to hit really hard.
Yeah.
So if you pay attention to what part of their chests are getting red, from the slaps, you realize they're hitting them where it's going to hurt, sure, but it's not going to injure them. And that's the difference. Yeah. And like, when you know where you can do those hits, you know where you can lay them in and not have it kill the guy. Or you can just talk to him and be like, you cool if we beat the shit out of each other? You know,
cool.
The Vader Mick Foley method, just like, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. You should probably beat the shit out of me. Yeah, like, and that's how they do it. Awesome. So your match of the week is Sabu. I picked Sting and Tenta, to be honest, because I just really loved it. And I have a lot of respect for Tenta and Sting. And it's one of those things where, like, as I was watching, I was like, this is Earthquake. Like, this is a guy who, he looks like a shark, but, like, let's watch this match knowing that John Tenta is the real deal. And him and Sting put on a great, great showing of the medium. You know what I mean? It wasn't anything wild and spectacular, but it was a really good look at the art form of like, they really put on a wrestling match of two guys who really know what the fuck they're doing. And I picked Sting and Tenta. I thought it was great. I thought it was a great match. And I love that ending where he just flew across the whole ring and still managed to hit him. Yeah. Full disclosure.
I got thrown by the shark costume. So now we will end this call and I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch it. Cause now I want to see it. Cause it's like,
knowing that he can actually go.
Yeah.
He was a football player who went to learn sumo in Japan. And like,
that's amazing.
He's an actual real good dude. I don't know if you actually watch Dark Side of the Ring at all, but if you do, this new season, like I said, did one on him and it's a fascinating story. And he's one of those guys we talk about, like, industry full of monsters, not John Tenta. Mm-hmm. John Tenta was just a good dude. Like, they exist. There's plenty.
Yeah.
Like, there
and
are.
You gotta stand them.
Yeah, you gotta stand them when you find them, because like, there's a lot of shitty guys in this industry. Yeah. So when you find someone who's a good dude in wrestling, like, that's why I'd be like, oh, this is a good dude. And if I ever find out they're not a good dude, I'm gonna be very mad. So that moves on to sign of the week. Did you have a favorite sign? There wasn't many this week.
I didn't see any.
You didn't even see any. All right. Okay. Well, here's the thing. I saw one.
Oh, good.
I saw one of the best wrestling signs I've ever seen. A for effort and execution. So it was coming back, I think, from a commercial break in Nitro. And it said WCW number one fan. And then as soon as they saw that there was a camera on him, they like moved and let it fall down and it opened up and there was a TBS logo that said Terry Bollea sucks for TBS. Yeah. And I was fucking dying. I was like, are you kidding me? Is that actually? And I like paused and went back and I was, it was like sleight of hand. Oh shit, camera. Like this guy was ready to shit on Hogan so hard that he cloak and daggered it. Like,
that's so good.
That's my sign of the week. Like, that was good shit.
Well, when I go back and watch the Sting and Shark, I'll look for the... look for the sign.
Yeah, it's on there somewhere. I think WCW had overall better show this week. I don't know about you, but that's why.
Yeah, I wasn't super keen on like the talking over the
old
like
shit.
The SummerSlam, like that was just like meh.
It really killed it for me because like there was already commentary on that when they did it the first time. And it's like, why don't you just, if you're going to do it, just show us the match.
Yeah, just show it. Yeah. Why are you talking more? Like,
All right. I'm happy we agree on that. Fucking
same. A. Oh, absolutely.
Well, thank you for hanging out and talking about old wrestling with me, Hamster. This is fucking fun. We actually went quite a while. there was a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thank you so much for inviting me. I was a little bit nervous. I'm glad that I just front loaded everything where I was like, I know nothing.
Nope. That's why.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's why
I love dissecting media. And I think that I think that you can find the human psyche and I mean the human spirit and literally everything.
Oh my God. Wrestling's dripping in psyche for sure. Yeah. And like, there's so much going on in wrestling. And that's why I love it so much. And I could watch it forever, which is like, I was going to do this anyways. Fuck it.
I love the vaudeville analogy. Cause
I mean, I'm not the first person to put that together, but similar, Josie Reisman, I talk about a lot. Like her book is fucking amazing. Ringmaster, check it out.
I've seen that on Blue Sky.
Josie's on Blue Sky, super hard.
Yeah.
She goes into a lot of the history. And like, it really is. It's just it's fascinating. As much as I shit on Jim Cornette too, as I should, there's reasons too. He's the greatest living wrestling historian probably right now. Okay. He knows everything going back to when it was real fighting, you know, and like that. Yeah. I gotta respect that shit. So like that. That's why like I just love this shit. And that's why I want to talk about it. It's so fucking interesting. But yeah, thanks for hanging out, and I will say thank you for the sickos listening. You are sickos for being here.
Thank
and I
you,
love
sickos.
You,
thank you, sickos.
Thank you.
This is good time, sickos. You can find us on Blue Sky Being Sickos at mnffpod.bsky.social, and there's a sicko Instagram at mnffpod.
And if you want to join the watch-alongs of pay-per-views, both from the Attitude Era and I guess also of the current era, because we're watching Dynasty. I think that came out already once this comes out, but there'll probably be more. You can join the Patreon at patreon.com/mnffpod. Otherwise, we will see you next week for more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Fake Fights. Toodles, bye.
Bye.